Hey, this is Michael Osborne from Famous and Gravy. Life lessons from dead celebrities. You're listening to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast with our friends Jason and Dee. Enjoy.
All right, Dee, so you got an idea for the intro on this one?
Yeah, so I'm thinking, okay, so I say, who's the master? And you say, Surely.
Who in the crap is Surely?
No, so like I say, who's the master? And you say, Surely you can't be serious.
No.
Come on.
No.
Who's the master?
No.
Come on. Who's the master?
Surely you can't be serious.
See, it's good.
I don't know about this one.
Who's the master?
Surely you can't be serious.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast. Guys, I can't tell you how much I love doing this podcast with my best friend in the world. We are talking about two iconic movies, but we usually wait to pump the next episodes to the end of the episode. I'm pumping our next episode right now.
Yeah.
We're about to jump into Tears for Fears, Songs from the Big Chair. And I have come to the realization that when we dive back into these albums, some of them are, you know, like things that are near and dear to my heart. And some of them are things that I kind of were like, oh, okay, yeah, I know that. And then we dive in and it's like when you go back to your high school reunion and that girl that you were like, yeah, she's kind of cute, kind of forgettable, but you know, and then you get to the high school reunion and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in love with her.
Yeah.
And that is what's happening with Surely You Can't Be Serious's next episode, which is Songs from the Big Chair. I can't wait to jump into it. It's going to be fantastic. So guys, please hit your follow button. Jump in with us when we dive into that one. And we're going to put it up against another icon, Wham's Make It Big.
It's going to be fun, man. A lot of number one hits to talk about on both of those albums.
So. Yeah, but that is not what we're here to talk about today. We are here for part two of our comparison of The Karate Kid and The Last Dragon. And guys, executive producer for this episode is Sherry Blackford. She is our most recent Patreon member. She has joined the Surely family, and we could not be happier to have her. Guys, if you want to join the Surely family, we have a ton of episodes that are just for our Patreon members. We dive into one-hit wonders and other novelty songs, and it is a family that I have grown to love almost as much as my own true family.
So yes, Sherry Blackford's a good friend of mine. I've went to church with them for many years. They moved to New Mexico, so I don't see them as much anymore. But she is an 80s movie lover and a good friend. So Sherry, thank you so much. Number two, let's make it clear. These are not one-hit wonder episodes solely, right?
Right.
Because I got barbecued on that the other day.
You did.
It's one-hit wonders. It's musical novelties. And it's just songs that we want to cover that we may not cover the whole album for.
We want to do it because we want to do it. And that's right.
Jiminy Christmas. People were out for blood that day.
Okay, so guys, we're back for part two of our comparison of these two movies, two karate movies from 84 and 85, two amazing movies that are obviously both about the martial arts, but are very different from each other, right? You've got one movie that you've got the novice student just meeting his mentor and his journey to reach, you know, not mastery, but competence. And on the other hand, you've got this movie where the student has met mastery. His mentor is saying, you have no more need for me. And he still wants more. And so it's a different setup, but two movies that still grab you by the heart and engage you for the whole show.
Okay, so let's flip over to the cast of The Last Dragon. So, right off the bat, let's talk about Timac.
Okay? Timac.
Sometimes it is hard to live the way of the wise.
We got a couple of one-name leads here.
I know. He starts karate at the age of 6 because his dad was friends with a guy who was a black belt. His father was Italian.
Yep.
His mother was black.
Timac LaRusso.
So at age 12, he sees a commercial starring Bruce Lee. And he said he really liked his aura. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Right? So he gets involved in karate, taekwondo, wrestling. So there's an audition for Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon.
Uh-huh.
So listen to the guys who could have been in this role.
Okay.
So he comes in. He said he did a terrible audition.
The only reason he auditioned was because there were guys in his karate tournament that were talking about auditioning. See, like he had no acting aspirations.
He's not an actor at all.
No, he was just like, maybe I'll go do that.
Here's what he was good at, though.
Yeah.
He was good at karate. And he showed up. He thought it was like for like a karate exhibition. So he shows up in a gi, and they're like, okay, read this scene. He's like, I thought I was just going to do some karate moves.
Would you like to see me with my shirt off?
Yeah. So here's the thing that they did well, okay?
Yeah.
It's a kung fu movie. Like those Bruce Lee movies,
They
get somebody who's really good at kung fu. And this guy was a phenom. Like, he was an excellent karate guy. Now listen, here are the people who also auditioned for the role of Bruce Leroy. Wesley Snipes.
Yeah. I mean, he'd have been thin
Can
enough back then.
Can you see this movie
yeah.
with Wesley Snipes?
Yeah, because what was Major League was what, 88?
Nine.
89?
Yeah.
So he was still pretty thin back then. I imagine 3 years earlier, he's even thinner and younger, obviously. So
yep. He could have been great. And he has martial arts.
But there's an innocence that he doesn't have that Tymac has.
Right.
Yeah.
So Mario Van Peebles.
Sure. Yeah.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah. Lawrence Fishburne, by the way, the story that I told you on Bruce Lee, I got from a History Channel episode.
Yeah.
Narrated by Lawrence Fishburne, Morpheus, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about Billy Blanks? You remember him?
Yeah.
The Taibo master from the 90s.
Yeah, kickboxing, right?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And then also, here's the one, Denzel Washington.
Ah, yeah. Well, I mean, he'd worked with Mike Schultz before,
That's
so
right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Based on all this talent, they go and hire a guy named Dan Silk as Bruce Leroy.
Okay. Tell me more.
So here's what I know. Tymac said that he came in and just crashed and burned in his audition. He knew how to do the karate moves. So he and his dad took a road trip afterwards, and it was his dad and another friend, and they were trying to cheer him up, and he was just being a depressed teenager the whole way. He was 19, by the way.
Yeah.
And they take this trip, and basically it encourages him to kind of find himself, find his confidence, and go back and ask for a second chance. So Dan Silk, who has been lost to the sands of time, had been hired to be Bruce Leroy.
Right.
Well, after this little road trip, Tymac shows up, goes back to the office, and begs for a second chance. And they really like that kind of stick-to-itiveness from him. And so they fired Dan Silk, and they hired Tymac.
I don't know if it's the same Dan Silk, but I just, while you're telling me the story, I looked him up on IMDb. There's a Dan Silk that is an actor that has one acting credit from 1999. In a movie called Stingers, and that is all.
Wow. Yep. There you go.
Poor Dan Silk.
You know, there's some interesting stories behind the scenes involving Tymac. They were going to do a sequel to this movie.
Yeah.
He didn't make very much money on the original, and so when Berry Gordy came to him and said, hey, what do you think, sequel? He's like, yeah, we're going to have to rework my contract, and Berry Gordy was upset and said, screw this, you messed it up, we're not doing it. Forget you. Yeah.
That's odd. I mean, you pay the guy more. No, and he hasn't done a whole lot since then. I did see an interview with him that's just a couple years old, but he mentioned in there that Louis Venosta had gotten the rights to the story back just recently and was working on a follow-up. And he's, you know, Tymac is like, if it happens, I'll be in it. I don't know what it's going to be about. I don't know what it is, but I will be in it.
And he looks like an absolute stud right now.
Yeah.
He's still ripped and ready to rock and all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
By the way, one of the things that he did do post The Last Dragon, I found this funny.
Yeah.
He was in a music video with Janet Jackson called Let's Wait a While. It's a soft makeout song that basically, the whole theme of the song is you're not getting any.
I know that you were a big fan of those soft makeout songs by Janet Jackson.
I like Janet Jackson.
You love Janet Jackson. He was actually in, you remember A Different World, the kind of spinoff of The Cosby Show?
Yeah,
he was actually in that as like a rapist. Like he was like a date rape guy because he wanted to show, because he was like, I had no acting experience when I did this movie. And after this, I went and studied. Like he went and studied with a lot of very well-known acting teachers. He developed his craft, and he's like, I want to go do something that is completely different than this Last Dragon character that I played. And so what he ends up playing is a rapist in A Different World in a TV series. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the real star of The Last Dragon. I'm talking about Vanity.
You're saying she's the star?
I'm saying she is the star of this.
No, she may be the eye candy, but she is not the star.
When you look at her, I mean, she looks like a rock star.
She is incredibly gorgeous.
She has incredibly gorgeous.
A lot of lip biting moments in this where she bites your lip and just makes you go all willied, you know.
She makes my knees weak.
Yeah, she gives you the shivers, yes. But I would not call her the star. They start this movie out with Tymac doing real karate, greased up and shining like a Roman god out
he
there.
He looks awesome,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, he looks great. And then in slow motion, his sensei shoots an arrow and he karate chops it. Like, there's no technology in 1985 to fake that.
It's phenomenal.
He really did it.
He really did it. Took him 2 hours.
If you gave me 200 hours, I would never get that done.
Or it'd end up in the back of my hand.
Right, be right through my wrist. That's right. Exactly right.
So
now, I was going to say, I thought that you were going to say that the true star of this movie was Julius Carey, a.k.a. Shonuff.
Well, you can make a case for him as well.
A.k.a. the Shogun of Harlem.
This is the triangle of stars here, right?
Yeah.
Tymac does a great job in this movie. His acting is not great, but his karate is.
Yeah.
Vanity, they don't ask her to do a whole lot, but she looks wonderful. And yeah. Then Shonuff is so much over the top and so fun. It just makes it makes it really fun.
So Julius Carey, he's 6'5".
Before we leave Vanity, I got something
for you. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. And by the way, guys, we've talked about Vanity at least 12
we love
times.
Vanity.
I mean, she came up in our Prince episode. She came up in our Dr. Feelgood episode. She came up when we were talking about the strip club scene in Beverly Hills Cop in our recent episodes this year. She herself has a very interesting story, but I'm sorry, you go ahead. Tell me more about Vanity.
So I thought this was interesting. She had just gotten fired from Purple Rain,
right?
Or quit, or whoever you ask. You
yeah,
know?
Right. Dismissed by the Prince.
That's right. Suzanne DePass is the one who brings this script to her. That's Berry Gordy's like right-hand woman.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And she says, I want you to read a script that's somewhat about my life. She had been a DJ and, you know, had been, you know, involved in the music industry and was kind of a popular figure or whatever. And so she brings it to Vanity and she tells her, if you like the camera, it'll like you back, which
nice.
I thought was
that's
nice.
That's great advice. Yeah.
Okay. So she goes on, she writes Seventh Heaven for this movie. I didn't know this. Adam Ant wrote a song for her in 1983 called Vanity.
I did not know that.
You have to listen to that.
Yeah.
Is this insanity? Is this insanity? Is this insanity? Space Mountain.
Okay, so it's not one I remember from the 80s, but I'm just going through here. I mean, she's had a love affair with Prince. She's had a love affair with Nikki Sixx. She probably has had a love affair with Adam Ant, given this song.
You want the list? I got it right here.
We're going to throw John Wagner in there as well?
Sure.
John Wagner.
Got to, right?
The soap opera star and the one-hit wonder.
Jack Wagner was Nikki Sixx's other girlfriend.
Was it really?
Yeah, it wasn't Vanity.
Oh, all right. Well, all right.
That's okay. So here's the list. She dated Rick James.
Yeah.
Which Prince stole from Rick James.
Yes, I remember that.
Okay.
Yes.
Adam Ant.
Uh-huh.
Billy Idol.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
James DeBarge, who we're going to talk about here in a minute from the rock group DeBarge.
Not L DeBarge.
Not L. James, his brother.
All right, okay.
John Stamos.
Oh, yeah.
Nikki Sixx. And Anthony Smith, who played defensive end for the LA Raiders.
They always seem to have at least one jock in the group, don't they?
Anthony Smith, who is a convicted murderer. Kidnapper, torturer.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. He has an interesting story. One of the things I thought was interesting, they got married after her conversion to Christianity, and he would come home, and she had a bunch of homeless people in their house who were showering and eating and hanging out, and he was like, you can't do this. You can't let strangers in their house. You know who you are. And
she lived fast and hard, had a conversion based upon conversations she had with none other than the lead actor in Flash Gordon.
Yes. Sam J. Jones.
Yeah. And unfortunately, probably just came along a little too late because ultimately her kidneys gave out on her. Yeah. What's her real name?
Denise Matthews.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Christopher Murney for a second. He's the guy who plays Eddie Arcadian.
Now, we don't want our star to look like a little pig peed in her eyes now, do we?
Uh-uh.
Then knock it off. Don't bug me. Fix your face. Shut up.
He is such a caricature.
This dude is over the top, man. He's at 11 this entire movie.
He's got to be, though, right?
He's fun. I like it.
Yes. This movie is a comic book. Right?
It is a comic book.
It is
book.
A total comic book. And it's arguably like the first superhero movie of quality since Superman.
Wow.
I mean, just think about it. I mean, he ultimately, by the end of the movie, develops superpowers. He gets the
it's
glow,
true, yeah.
right? And the villain even has a little bit of superpower too. It's just that his superpower ends up being better.
Yeah.
So Last Dragon, Bruce Leroy, he's the superhero of the 80s until 1989.
Wow. Good point. Yeah. Good point. So let's talk about Julius Carey. We've been kind of putting that off. He plays Shonuff.
Three times over, boy.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you see that Coors Light commercial I sent to you?
I did, yes. She's not going to come.
Yeah.
She's not going to come. She'll come, man. Just give. It's only been like, what time? He's like, yeah, I told her at 7. That's 8. Okay, you said 8 o'clock on Friday. What? 8 o'clock on Friday. I said 8 o'clock on Thursday. And then the whole bar's like, she's not coming.
Yeah. And he plays a totally different character. He's like in a business suit. And, you know, he's a nice guy.
He was on Briscoe County Jr. as kind of the foil sort of for Briscoe County Jr. for Bruce Campbell. Also directed by Mike Schultz.
Really?
Yeah.
How about that? You know, he plays like, he's like a Mad Max character in this.
He came into the audition in costume.
Is that right?
He did. He was, I mean, he's 6'5". He's very strong looking guy, right? And his hair is amazing and all that. But yes, he came in like fully decked out in all the regalia. And obviously he changes costumes several times throughout, but there's pretty much a shoulder padded theme going on here.
He's awesome in this.
And they wanted somebody who knew karate to be the villain. They wanted, but he didn't know any, but they just said, this guy is too freaking awesome. So here's the story. 'Cause he's the real actor, right?
Sure.
And so Ty Mack has never acted in anything before.
Right.
He plays it so perfectly because he plays it so serious. This absurd thing, the Shogun of Harlem. You know, this,
right?
Who is it? Bruce Leroy. Like, he's so serious on this ridiculous part that it makes it so funny. And Ty Mack couldn't quit laughing, right? He couldn't quit laughing at this guy. So Julius Carey, being the trained actor, is like, I can't have this guy thinking this is funny. It'll spoil the scene. It'll ruin it. So he deliberately starts to pick on him at, like, in between takes and giving him a hard time. And at first, Ty Mack is thinking this is funny and this guy's just being funny. But after a while, it's annoying. And then at some point, he jumps up and he's like, I'm going to whip your ass. And all 6'5" of Julius Carey takes off running out of the door.
Is that right?
Yeah. Good scared one. The crap out of him, ran away, came back like, look, man, I was just trying to keep you from laughing at me, all right? I'm just
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Leo O'Brien for a second. That is the guy who plays Richie.
Man, I'd have slapped that sucker silly with a suit for alienation of affections. If it wasn't for me, he wouldn't even know she was. Chocolate-covered yellow peril.
He sells this. I mean, he could be the star of this movie, if you will. I mean, he really, every scene he's in, he steals that scene.
He's really good.
And I told you, he's got a famous relative. So his older brother is a guy named Guy O'Brien.
Okay.
But if you listen to rap in the early 80s, you knew him better as Master G because he was a part of the Sugar Hill Gang.
Whoa. Interesting.
Now, what's weird, I mean, like I said, he steals every scene that he's in.
Yeah.
I love that he break dances out of the ropes. That's fantastic. But then he just doesn't do much. And then in 2012, he's only 41 years old and he passes away. And like, there's no information that I can find that tells me what happened to him. I don't know.
Okay. I've got it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've heard about this, but there's like the curse of the Last Dragon, right?
Oh.
So Vanity.
Right.
She passes away because of kidney failure at age 57.
Yeah.
Julius Carey, he passes away at the age of 56, I think, in 2008 due to pancreatic cancer.
Right, okay? Right. Yeah.
So Leo O'Brien, who played Richie, Bruce Leroy's little brother.
Yeah.
He gets shot 3 times. Okay.
Really?
And it's just, you know, whatever, street violence, whatever. But here's the thing. I saw an interview with him afterwards, and he's like showing his scar. Like, so they had to split his abdomen to get all these bullets out.
Uh-huh.
But when they put him back together, something didn't go back the right way, and he died from his surgery, from the removal of the bullets.
Oh, no.
So there you go.
That's tragic. Well, Christopher Murney's still all around.
Yep.
He's still alive.
Oh, yeah.
And you got his girlfriend.
Faith Prince.
Get out of your room, wet!
Faith Prince is the name of the actress, Angela
Vaccaro.
Or Vaccaro. Yeah. She does a great job. I love her in this. She's very lovable and so silly. I think I had a little crush on her back in the 80s. I think probably she's, my Cyndi Lauper phase.
Well, she's supposed to be like Cyndi Lauper, right?
Yeah, 100%.
She's got an annoying voice, but she's cute, but ditzy and kind of dumb and kind of fun. And I like her. She's the one that they're trying to convince Vanity, you got to play her video, you know?
Uh-huh.
And she's been in a lot of things. She was in a Frasier episode where she was a woman with a terrible voice. But, you know, she has kind of a heartfelt moment in the movie where she's like, you know what? You've been making it on my tits, too, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's shockingly powerful, you know?
Storms out. She's the one that ultimately spreads the news that helps the dojo come and save Bruce Leroy when he's getting attacked.
Yeah.
Just keep hearts. This is not a badly put together story. It clips along, yeah.
She's really nice to Laura Charles, the Vanity character. She's like, maybe she's just tired. She just, you know, she's nice. She's a sweetheart.
She is sort of the hooker with a heart of gold, just not quite a hooker.
That's right.
Right?
Okay, we got to talk about Mike Starr, the guy Rock. Who plays Rock.
Yeah.
And I told you, my headcanon. Okay, so he's a boxer in the New York area. He's kind of a heavy. He kind of works for a bad guy. Later on, he moves to Providence, Rhode Island, and becomes involved in the guy in Dumb and Dumber and becomes the hitman that's supposed to take out Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels.
Yeah.
It just works, right?
Yeah.
By the way, I also feel like Bruce Leroy's dad, the guy who runs the pizza joint, the guy who's like in charge of like, get your pizza over to our pizza or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Now there isn't a hungry soul in this town doesn't know my slogan. Just direct your pizza to Daddy Green's Pizza.
I feel like that guy and Mr. McDowell's are like best buddies,
they
right?
do look a lot alike. Yes, they do.
See, they got the Big Mac. I got the Big Mick. We both got two all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, and onions. But they use a sesame seed bun. My buns have no seeds.
You also have Keisha Knight Pulliam, who plays Rudy in The Cosby Show in her debut.
Yeah, she's the little sister of Bruce Leroy, yeah.
Okay. You've got William H. Macy, who's in this movie for like 10 seconds.
It's nuts. Right? I saw that, I'm like... Is this his only part in the whole movie?
Yes.
I mean, we're talking about Academy Award nominee William H. Macy, who's been in, I mean, he's in Fargo. He's in Boogie Nights. I mean, he's in a million. He's an acting teacher. He's written books, you know, Steppenwolf theater guy. And he is literally in this movie for about 25 seconds trying to talk Vanity's character into playing Arcadian's video, right?
Nobody says no to Mr. Arcadian.
Yeah, he's going to get my throat slit.
Right.
And he's wearing this jacket that if you said to me, pick a more 80s jacket, I could not do it. It is patchy with bright colors that are glimmering in the light. It's absurd. And William H. Macy, I mean, still looks like William H. Macy.
He does.
And so he's wearing this jacket, and all I can think is, you can't pull that off, bro. I don't know how they picked you for this part, but you can't pull that jacket off.
He looks the exact same.
He does. He does.
I got one more guy for you.
Yeah.
Ernie Reyes Jr.
Yeah.
He plays the little six-year-old kid who's karate fighting the whole time as well.
First movie that he's in.
Yeah. He's like the little kid karate expert.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he went on to be in Sidekicks.
Yes.
Gil Gerard.
Yes, Gil Gerard.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a TV show that probably lasted for one season, but I probably watched every episode of, right? and then he was one of the stunt guys when he got older. He was one of the stunt guys for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and everybody liked him so much that they wrote a character for him. And so he was a real person then in that series. He's bad A, man.
He did Surf Ninjas. And he
Surf Ninjas.
He plays the cemetery warrior in Indiana Jones Part 4.
That's right.
How about that?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I saw that brief little snippet. I was like, was that Ernie Reyes? And then I went back to feeling miserable because I was watching The Crystal Skull. Okay, so we can't leave. There's one more guy. It's along the lines of William H. Macy, but it's even like you see him even less.
Okay.
Chaz Palminteri is the guy driving the car when they kidnap Vanity for the
That's
first time.
Right.
He's also
That's
in the
right.
in the scene where Bruce Leroy comes in and beats up all of the goons. Chaz Palminteri, if you don't know, he's the detective in The Usual Suspects and a million other things. He's been in Modern Family, and of course he's in A Bronx Tale with Robert De Niro as well.
Right.
You know, I mean, he's huge, but in this, he's the guy driving the car and the guy getting beat up.
I got one more thing for you.
Okay.
You know the three guys at the fortune cookie factory?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Sum Young Goy?
Yes.
Some dumb guy.
Yeah. You know what their names are? Their character names?
No.
This is going to, you're going to laugh at this. It's Hu Yi, like H O Y-I.
Okay.
Who ye, Lou ye, and do ye.
Huey, Dewey, and Louie?
Yes. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my gosh.
Ye, look at that. I'm like, come on. Okay, so there's four masters we need to talk about from these two movies. Okay, I want you to rank them as far as how good a master they are.
Okay, yeah.
So you've got, he doesn't even have a name. He's just listed as master in the credits from The Last Dragon. This is Bruce Leroy's instructor, his teacher, his sensei.
Yeah, Thomas Ikeda.
He tells him, hey, listen, you're going to get the glow one of these days. he kind of deceives him.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, he's 100%. Kinda like, you know, it's this, hey, when you will know when the time is right type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to talk about that concept a little bit later. But yes, he says, you're done. And when Leroy isn't happy with that answer, he makes up a story.
He does the Obi-Wan Kenobi thing from a certain point of view.
right.
Okay. Then you've got Shonuff, who's a master.
Yeah.
In The Karate Kid, you've got Mr. Miyagi, of course.
Yep.
And you've got Martin Cove, who plays Sensei Kreese.
John Kreese.
Who's the best master of these four guys?
Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah?
Yeah, no question.
Okay. Let me play devil's advocate for just a second.
Okay.
Now, there's some ethical dilemmas with Sensei Kreese.
Certainly.
However, none of his students ever showed up where he was knocked down drunk.
Okay.
And he's promoting physical fitness in the gym. He's keeping people off the streets.
Uh-huh.
He is teaching people a life skill.
Mm-hmm.
The other is a maintenance man who's grooming Daniel with, I'm just kidding, I'm not going to say he's grooming.
No, yes, he's grooming bonsai trees. He's not grooming Daniel.
Yes. Anyway, no, I'm totally kidding. Obviously, Mr. Miyagi is the right answer.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm putting my tongue in my cheek on that one because that has to be what you're doing here.
Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the getting drunk part because the producers wanted to take that scene out.
That was the scene they wanted removed.
Yeah, and the director was like, no, this scene stays in, and he maintains he thinks that's what won Pat Morita the Oscar. And you have to have a flawed character. You can't have a perfect character. It's like Obi-Wan Kenobi. He is flawed. He deceived Luke Skywalker.
Lied to his face.
From a certain point of view. Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, that scene with Mr. Miyagi where he's talking about how his wife died during childbirth. And you kind of get that idea that his wife is gone, his child is gone, and Daniel is sort of filling that the son I never had aspect.
100%. 100%. And here is an interesting thing. He says in that scene that he was in the 442nd Regimental Combat Team. That was a real team that was composed of almost exclusively Japanese Americans. They had come from internment camps. They're like, can we just go join the army and get out of the camp and go fight? When they went and fought, they ended up becoming, if not the most, one of the most highly decorated units in the history of the United States military. Miyagi has the Medal of Honor. Well, in real life, that combat team had 21 Medal of Honor awardees, 52 Distinguished Service Crosses, 560 Silver Stars, 4,000 Bronze Stars, and 9,486 Purple Hearts.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, one of the famous members of the team was ended up becoming a senator. He was a guy from Hawaii named Daniel Inouye. And yeah, is actually
Daniel in Hawaii.
It's weird how that works out, but yes, yes, yes. The idea that Miyagi has gone and fought for his country, that moment, I would understand, you know, I went and fought for my country. And while I was doing that, they let my wife and child die in the internment camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's moving. It's the thing that good stories are made of.
Yeah. And there's a very tender moment where Daniel's son tucks him into bed and gives him this bow of respect.
Yeah.
It's really a great moment. Love it. Love that part in the movie.
It's one of the best scenes in the whole movie. And it and the bonsai tree scene are long takes. They're very long takes. And with today's attention deficit, it's a little difficult to kind of get through those scenes. But for somebody who is our age, who is used to that, these are scenes that make the movie. They make it a cinematic experience instead of just an adventure fest.
Absolutely. Everybody wants a teacher like Mr. Miyagi. Somebody 100%. Who loves you, cares for you, looks out for you, teaches you.
So there's a good question. If you've got to pick mentor, are you picking Obi-Wan Kenobi or are you picking Mr. Miyagi? And keep in mind, Obi-Wan Kenobi is going to sacrifice his life within about 2 hours of you meeting him.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I'm going to say Obi-Wan just because he oversaw your upbringing for 19 years from afar.
Uh-huh.
But you can't go wrong with Mr. Miyagi either.
No, he's the definitive mentor in my book for sure.
Okay. There's something I want to break down with you.
Okay.
It's been 40 years. We have lived with this movie, but I want to break down the final fight between Daniel-san and Johnny.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. This is the moment we've been waiting for.
There's a moment I don't understand.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Daniel LaRusso's going to fight. Oh, my gosh. LaRusso's going to fight.
Yeah.
Okay. Shows up. He and Johnny square off. Johnny's mega pissed. Right. You can see the intensity in his eyes, and he's got his fists up, and he's coming hard. Right?
Right.
So here we go. Daniel blocks a couple of shots, gets a good shot to the sternum. Boom, 1 point LaRusso.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So the next thing is they line up. Here we go. He takes Johnny down and gives him a karate chop to the back of the head when he's on the mat.
Yep.
And actually kind of bloodies Johnny's nose.
Uh-huh.
2-0 LaRusso.
Which is...
LaRusso.
Yeah, which is the point that, you know, Johnny has to go to the side and you have Kreese say, sweep the leg.
Sweep the leg.
Maybe, other than wax on, wax off, maybe the most iconic line in the entire movie. And I'll say this, Billy Zabka said that every other time that they had rehearsed that scene, that Marty Cove had given that line in this kind of anger-ridden, you know, frustrated way.
Sweep the leg. Yeah.
But then when the film rolled, he delivered it in this cold, almost sociopathic, unemotional way that kind of shocked Zabka at the time. And so when you see his eyes tracing Kreese's eyes back and forth, it's genuine. It's like, are you kidding? Are you serious? What is this? Uh-huh. And so it's again, pivotal moment in the movie, you know, and then yes, sensei.
Right. You got a problem with that?
Yeah.
No sensei. Right.
Right.
So he comes out, he takes, you know, Daniel's got an injured leg. So he takes his foot, hits the injured leg, and then comes back across, kicks him in the face.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Wham, wham. Sweep the leg, and then back across, point Lawrence.
Yep.
My question, first of all, is why does he do that 2 more times in a row? Because Daniel had no chance of defending it.
Right. He knows what's coming now. But
it was a clear advantage. Daniel could not block that with his injured leg.
Right.
Okay? So you got 2 points LaRusso, 1 point Lawrence. 3 points to win now. Then the next point, Johnny takes down Daniel. Daniel's rolling away, and he gives the karate chop to the ribs.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, 2-2. All right, this is the next thing that goes wrong, okay? So the next time they line up, Johnny comes hard at Daniel and rocks him right in the face. Like, punch to the jaw.
Uh-huh, yeah.
There is no, they don't say illegal punch. They don't say you were out of bounds. They make no mention of anything, but there's no point given, and they don't argue for the point.
No, yeah, he kind of just says, he says something. The referee says something that's almost unintelligible. Maybe it's out of bounds. Maybe, I don't know what he says.
Right.
And then just says no point.
But no point.
It does not clearly explain why there was not a point on that. Right.
So when I go back, like Allie, when she explains the rules to Daniel-san, she said, look, everything above the waist is a point. Sternum, kidneys, ribs, head.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't seem like it's off limits. And he just punches him dead in the face. Seems like tournament over. Johnny wins. But of course, then we move on to the greatest 90 seconds. Let me say this again. The last 90 seconds of this movie are the best last 90 seconds of any movie in the 80s.
Holy cow, that's a bold statement.
Think about it, because everything else has some sort of epilogue.
Yeah, did we talk? I don't remember if we talked about this in the first part of this, but in the original script, the parking lot confrontation between Mr. Miyagi and John Kreese was supposed to happen as the epilogue. They finished filming that last 90 seconds, like you talked about. They finished filming the end of the tournament, and John Avildsen says, I don't think we can make this better.
Right. We don't need anything else.
I don't think he calls the producers and he's like, I think we're done. I don't think we need the last scene. And they said, okay, don't film the last scene then.
And, fantastic.
And like I did mention this in the last episode, they were like, oh, wait, everybody was like, why didn't we have some sort of connection with Miyagi at the end? And so that's why they come back for, you know, a last minute filming of Mr. Miyagi nodding his head. And then you have the freeze frame and the cutaway and all of that. But yes, you're right. When you see that last 90 seconds happen, Daniel has got the trophy and Johnny is saying, you're all right, LaRusso.
Right.
There's nothing more to say. It's done.
It's done.
It is. You've won. Congratulations. Everybody's going to go home and they're going to do the crane kick in the driveway. That is exactly what I did. And that is exactly what I guarantee hundreds of thousands of kids my age did when they finished watching this movie.
Of course. You know, I think about that decision to cut the movie at that moment, right?
Right.
Crane kick to the face. You won. Trophy hoisting. Mr. Miyagi looking on proudly. The swell of the music. Kill it. Right. Boom. Right there.
Right.
We talked about how when they, the first run through of Footloose, when Kevin Bacon says, let's dance, they wanted to kill that movie at that moment because that was the winning moment. Like Dean Pitchford said, when they okayed the dance, that was it. You won. They decided, no, audiences didn't like that. They wanted to go to the party afterwards.
Right.
So Footloose goes to the party, but in The Karate Kid, the party's, it's over. It's won.
Exactly.
Now, at the beginning of Karate Kid Part 2, we actually get to continue that moment out in the parking lot.
Right. And what better of a beginning?
It's, I mean, because great.
It buttons at the end of Karate Kid 2, right? It gives you the hook that gets set at the end of the movie. It's perfect.
So the beginning of Karate Kid 2, We see the fight in the parking lot spill out, and you know, second place sucks. The fight gets ugly between Kreese and Johnny in the parking lot.
Right.
And then you have Kreese busting out car windows with his hands and messing up his hands.
Side note, did we talk about this in the last one?
I don't think so.
So they're supposed to, in this scene, they're supposed to break the glass, like the special effects guys are supposed to break the glass as he hits it. Like right. There's a little explosive whatever
right.
on the glass. And Martin Cove is like, all right, you guys ready? I'm like, yes. And he's like, okay. And he throws that punch, real glass, throws that punch into the glass. They hit the detonator button and it doesn't work. And he literally punches his fist through the glass.
Oh.
Like his knuckles are cut and bleeding. And they're like, oh no. And if you remember the scene, that's only part one.
Right. He's got to do it again.
Yeah. He's got to do it again. And he's like, I'm not freaking doing this again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Second time. It didn't work again.
What?
Yes. He literally punched. But the second time he didn't punch. He pulled his punch a little bit. Uh-huh. And so you see him hit the glass, but he doesn't shatter it. Uh-huh. It's that cutaway. And then they have him, you know, the glass break and then his fist goes through it from the perspective of the car. And so.
You have one job, break the glass, right? The only thing, my biggest complaint about the beginning of Karate Kid Part 2 is the stupid honk the nose.
What? No! That's the hook that I'm talking about. Did you hate Karate Kid 2?
I didn't hate Karate Kid 2. I just...
Did you hate the end of Karate Kid 2?
Just the honking of the news is a little bit...
I know, and that's what happens at the end of Kozen.
It's a little bit silly.
Okay.
All right.
So anyway, back to your initial idea about the point system. There is this whole YouTube video that started 10 years ago or whatever that basically said that Danielson is the villain.
Right.
And that Johnny is the true hero in this thing.
Yes.
And breaks it down bit by bit. You know, Johnny's girl, they were on, a bit of a break and she's talking. If you go back and look, Daniel is the one that's kind of picking the fight initially. And he's like, get away from me, kid, until it goes a little too far. And then he's like, okay, you've poked the bear long enough and these little imperfections. But then at the end, when he has that crane kick to the face, the idea is this is an illegal kick, and he should not have won the tournament from this illegal kick. So this YouTube video comes out 10 years ago.
Right.
And then it becomes viral, and then people who were involved with the movie start talking about it, and fans of the movie start talking about it. And then the guys who directed or produced Hot Tub Time Machine have William Zabka come in and become a part of the movie, say, hey, have you seen this? What if we did something where this was our premise? This was our vantage point point was Johnny Lawrence was the victim the whole time. And that's how we get the series Cobra Kai.
I love it. I love it. I told you, I made a little sheet here. It seems to me that there's plenty of blame to go around, okay?
Oh, for sure.
So I've got my little a-hole chart right here. I wanted to talk to you about this really quick, okay?
Yes.
So you have five primary groups of people who are a-holes in the Karate Kid.
I know that all of our listeners at one time or another have said, he's being an a-hole, but he's also being an a-hole. But how many of you have made a chart?
I made the chart. And so I've got the moments that they're an a-hole, and I also rated the level of a-holeness, okay? So you have Johnny, Daniel, Kreese, the Cobra Kai guys, and Miyagi. Yes, I said it, Miyagi. All right, so Johnny's an a-hole when he shoves the boombox into Daniel's chest and then roundhouse kicks him, okay?
All right.
I got that as like a 6 and an 8 on the level of a-holeness.
Uh-huh. What prompted the roundhouse kick to the face, by the way?
Well, Daniel sucker punches him.
Exactly.
Right? Daniel sucker punches him, which I've got a level 8 a-holeness.
Yeah.
Okay?
An 8 to an 8.
Right.
Yeah.
We talked about this. When you get two 18-year-old boys, you get the testosterone flowing, you got a pretty girl around, you got my friends, I want to show off, I don't want to be shown up. Decisions are made.
Yeah. I'm right? The new kid, I got to establish who I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From there, Johnny continues his butt kicking of Daniel due to the sucker punch, right? Daniel tries to sucker punch him and then say, hey, we're even.
Right.
That doesn't work.
No.
And then you've got soccer trouble. I marked this down as like a 2 for Daniel. You know, he gets tackled and, this school sucks.
As a soccer dad, I'm going to wholeheartedly disagree with you on that because they planned it. They wanted to trip him. And so that's what happened. And that's a part of soccer. I mean, you didn't play soccer, but you played football, right?
Right.
It is a trip. It is deliberately, they're trying to trip him, but it is done in such a way that it could be an attempt for the ball. But the response is to jump up and
tackle him. Right.
If you're in a soccer game, the guy who does the trip, maybe gets a yellow card, probably just gets a penalty. The guy who jumps up and tackles him gets a red card, ejected from the game, and will not play in the next game.
Yeah. Yeah.
No question.
And the guy who trips him is even Bobby, and he's the one with the most niceness.
Yeah. He's the
right.
Yep.
All right. So let's continue on to the next severe level of a-holeness.
Uh-huh.
Where Daniel's riding his bike, minding his own business, and the Cobra Kai pull up in their motorcycles and they push him down the hill.
100% the worst thing that the Cobra Kais do in the whole deal, for sure.
Ooh, I got that as a second place.
They were unprovoked.
That was just being a bully.
They were just being bullies, yes.
All right, I got that level 8. That's level 8.
Okay.
Okay. Now then, this is where
I go 9 or 10 if we're on a scale of 10.
Okay.
That's a 9 or 10.
Well, I'm going to get to my 9 moment here.
Yeah. All right.
All right. So we go to a Halloween party.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel's tired of getting picked on.
No.
Daniel's tired of getting picked on.
He is tired of getting picked on, but nobody's picking on him at the Halloween party.
That's true.
He is having a nice little moment with the girl who's cozying up to him inside his little shower contraption that he's hiding in like a coward.
If Daniel and Allie just go have a makeout party,
uh-huh,
the movie ends there.
Could be.
Probably.
Could be.
Right?
Yeah.
However, Mr. John Lawrence is rolling illegal drugs in the bathroom.
You mind if I do a J?
Daniel sees this as an opportunity,
mm-hmm,
to provoke him.
Yeah.
Albeit just a little bit of water. I mean, come on. It's not life and death here.
Okay.
All right. So he turns on the water
hose.
No,
you're not right, but I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to listen to what the rest is.
I got a level 2 a-holeness from Daniel on that
one. Oh, yeah. Strong disagree on that one. That is a level 6.
Okay.
That is unprovoked. Nobody's doing anything to you. You could have walked away and nobody would have had any idea you were even in the room, but you decide, hey, I'm going to douse this guy. Like, I mean, imagine you
are. Keep in mind, this is one day after they pushed him down a hill on his bike.
Yes, it is.
It's in response.
In the legal world, we would call that a cool down period. The heat of passion is no longer in play.
Okay.
I gotta up the ante on the severity of dousing him. And you douse a J, the J is no good anymore. That's wasted money for a high school kid, which is a big deal.
Okay.
All right.
So then Daniel causes a 4-car pileup in the high school parking lot, which I got a level 4 on. Okay.
Yeah.
The skeletons chase him down.
Mm-hmm.
Now here you go. They're going to kill him.
Yeah.
I mean, according to the writer of The Karate Kid, they are out for blood.
100%.
This is when they're going to kill him.
Had he had Lawrence deliver the kick to the face,
yes,
it would have probably been a death knell.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So I got a level 10 Johnny on that one.
Okay.
I got a level 9 on the Cobra Kai because they're holding him up. Look, he can't even hold himself up. He's had enough, Johnny. Yeah. I'll decide when he's had enough, man. Right? Okay. So you got a level 9, level 10. Miyagi comes in, saves the day. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man, whatever. Okay.
Right.
Now then, this is when Kreese enters the picture here, right? Mm-hmm. Kreese threatens Miyagi in his dojo.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, in response to the challenge. Okay.
Yeah. All he says is, I want you to just leave him alone.
Leave him alone for training.
Truce.
You're a pushy little bastard, but I like it.
Yeah. Right? Well, but I mean, when they go over there, their initial objective is to just say, truce. We're not going to fight anymore. And Kreese basically says, no, you beat the crap out of a bunch of high school kids, old man.
Right.
We are not just going to end on that.
Open season on him and you.
Yeah.
Right? This is where I got a level 1 a-hole from Miyagi for dumping Daniel-san in the cold water while he's standing on the bow of the boat. Okay?
But it was funny.
It was funny.
The funny overcomes it.
Yeah, okay. So it's just a level 1, right? Okay. Now then, let's talk about Johnny and Allie dancing at the country club.
Okay.
Johnny looks like he's sincerely trying to bridge a gap a little bit with Allie. Doesn't like the way things ended. Doesn't like the, look, we got some problems. We can work through this.
Uh-huh.
But he sees Daniel poking through the window.
Yep.
So he decides, oh, well, watch this, buddy. I'm going to put my hand on her butt and kiss her. And she punches him. I got level 7 a-holeness on Johnny on that.
That sounds fair. Okay. That's fair for sure.
All right. Now then, move to the tournament. Daniel, you know, Daniel's mother's not here, there to help him dress himself. And so Dutch shoves him while he's trying to put his gi on.
I think he's going to cry, man.
What's the matter? Mommy not here to dress you? Level 3, not too bad. Uh-huh. Just a shove. Right. Okay. But when Kreese tells Bobby he wants Daniel out of commission.
Yep.
That's a level 10 from Kreese.
Come on. I could take this guy.
I want his ACL snapped. Bobby decides to go through with it, even though begrudgingly. He feels bad about it.
I'm sorry, man.
Then you've got the sweep the leg move, and you've got Johnny's elbow to the knee. Overall, I got Johnny's level of a-holeness divided by the amount of times that he was an a-hole. It was 6.6.
An average of a 6.6. Okay. Yeah.
I got the rest of the Cobra Kai guys at a 5.6.
Okay.
I got Kreese at a 5.3, and I got Daniel at a 4.0.
Okay.
So there's plenty of blame to go around, although Johnny is the highest a-hole-ometer.
Does he get no like retraction points for handing the trophy over? And
there is a little bit of redeeming value on that. So although he did just try to snap his AC up with his elbow.
Right.
So there you go. That's my a-hole-ometer chart.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, how do you rank the a-holes? You don't need to go into all of it. Just tell us who's the bigger a-hole, Daniel-san or Johnny Lawrence.
Okay. All right. I want to talk music with you for a second.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
Okay. Karate Kid is scored by Mr. Bill Conti.
Yep. Hey, you got the director from Rocky. You've got the composer for Rocky. Heck yeah.
What do you think about the music in this?
It's perfect. It is perfect. It is not. So you don't have any of the epic songs that you did from Rocky. You don't have Gonna Fly Now. You don't have Going the Distance, which are just, I mean, those are pivotal songs in my youth. But you definitely have strong thematic music throughout the movie that carries it for sure.
Okay. You also got Cruel Summer by Bananarama. We talked about that in our Best of 84.
Could not have picked a better song for that moment in that movie.
Cruel Summer.
Yeah.
Trouble on the soccer field. Looks bad in front of his girl. Got taken down in front of everybody. Kicked off the soccer team.
Yeah.
You also have the song, You're the Best.
Try to be best, cause you're only a man. And a man's got to learn to take it.
A Joe Esposito.
That one is one that was actually not supposed to be for this movie.
Yeah, it was written for Rocky III. You know the song that replaced it in Rocky III?
Well, is it got to? It's got to be Eye of the Tiger,
it's
right?
Eye of the Tiger,
right?
That That's why you have some of the lyrics like history repeats itself, right?
Uh-huh.
Rematch with Mr. T. Doesn't really make a lot of sense in The Karate Kid.
Nope.
But we don't care. It's a great song, right? Now, it was then passed on from Rocky III to Flashdance. They were going to put in Flashdance.
Okay.
You know the song that replaced it in Flashdance?
No.
Maniac by Michael Cimbello.
Oh, actually was what went through my head. All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now then, John G. Alveson's like, this is too good a song. I want it for Karate Kid.
Yeah.
So they put it in there. No music video. They didn't release it as a single. Uh-huh. But because there's so much nostalgia around Karate Kid,
yeah,
it kind of has its own little cult following out there.
Yeah, and I mean the fact that they they enter the song with Ali saying, "You're the best, Daniel."
Yeah,
I mean, it's perfect. Right? It's perfect.
Now, Bill Conti wrote the music for that song. Do you know who wrote the lyrics?
No.
Ali Willis.
Oh my gosh.
Ali Willis, throwback to our Beverly Hills Cop soundtrack episode.
Our September Patreon episode. Our Best of 84 episode. I mean, she's all over the place. I love that.
She wrote the theme song for Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. I want to talk music with you from The Last Dragon.
Oh, 100%.
Okay. Maybe even more important in The Last Dragon because you've got that Motown influence.
Yeah. I mean, this is Karate Kid meets MTV. I mean, it's
right.
I mean, you've got easily 3 to 4 music videos within the movie itself.
Okay. Here's the thing. I think there's only one great song from The Last Dragon.
Mm.
There's a couple other songs that catch my attention.
Okay.
There's a song called The Last Dragon, which is good.
Yeah.
They show it during the final fight between Shonuff and Bruce Leroy.
Right.
You've got Seventh Heaven, which is sung by Vanity.
Right.
She kind of sang that when she did promotional tours and stuff on talk shows and stuff.
Right.
It's not a great song.
No.
It's sung by a great-looking lady, but it's not a great song.
Right.
The song I really want to talk about is The Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge.
Excellent. It's an excellent song, and they make it a showpiece in the movie, too.
Right.
I mean, it is literally, it's a music video that just is like, okay, push pause on your VCR there. We're going to go ahead and show you a music video now, and now back to the movie.
Yeah, it's really, and you know, you talked about in our Miami Vice soundtrack episode, it sounds like the music of middle 80s.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's one of the biggest songs of 1985. Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge. Mm-hmm. It's number 3. Okay?
Yeah.
Here you go. Here's your top 5 from the week of May 4th, 1985, the day I turned 12 years old. Okay?
I was wondering, yeah.
I turned 12 years old on this day. Yeah. Okay? One Night in Bangkok is number 5.
Go check out our Patreon episodes because we cover that song and it is a great story.
Don't You Forget About Me, number 4.
Go check our Patreon episodes because we cover that song and it is a great story.
Number 3, Rhythm of the Night. Number 2, Crazy for You by Madonna.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
And number 1, We Are the World.
Ah, we've got to cover that.
We got to cover that one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Here's what I wanted to tell you, though. The song Rhythm of the Night was written by a lady named Diane Warren.
Okay.
This is how she kind of cracked in the business, okay? She has written some bangers. This was kind of her first big success, though, okay?
Okay.
So, like I said, number 3 hit on the Hot 100. They called her up and said, hey, we need a song for this movie called The Last Dragon. Do you have anything? She's like, well, I've got this thing that I've been working on. I think we can kind of mold it to your movie. So she gives it to them. It's called Rhythm of the Night. They give it to DeBarge, which is a Motown artist. Now then, listen to the songs that she has written, okay? Solitaire, which became a hit for Laura Branigan.
Yep.
Then she does Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge. Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now by Starship.
Wow.
Who Will You Run To by Heart. I Get Weak by Belinda Carlisle.
Wow.
Look Away by Chicago.
Oh my gosh.
If I Could Turn Back Time by Cher. When I See You Smile by Bad English.
Wow.
Blame It on the Rain by Milli Vanilli. Unbreak My Heart by Toni Braxton.
Oh my gosh.
And I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith.
That's a stellar career. I mean, a third of those songs would be a iconic music writing career. That is incredible.
How about that?
That is incredible. Good.
I saw the list, I was like, holy smokes.
Cow. Yeah. Okay. I've got just a few more tidbits that I want to cover before we hit Last Judgment.
Sure.
And then we can jump in. All right.
Okay. Yep.
So Last Dragon. Movie was a critical failure. Critics panned this movie, hated it, but box office success, technically speaking, because they only spent $10 million to make the movie, and they got $33 million on the box office, but then they released it to HBO, and it became a cult classic.
Where I saw it on HBO, yeah.
Okay. Seventh Heaven, the disco where they shot all the stuff,
sure,
right?
Right.
Was built on a camera mart on 54th and 10th. One day, Diana Ross goes to the set and she says, can I buy this for my next tour?
Really?
Yes. Okay. Here we go. Last one. Leroy wears the same jumpsuit Bruce Lee wore in Game of Death 1978. All right. I got quite a few on The Karate Kid.
I'm ready.
You ready?
Hit me.
Okay. You know the Banzai logo?
Yes.
Actually designed by Pat Morita.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Yep. Okay. We talked about Pat E. Johnson, martial arts consultant and referee in the last scenes.
Yeah.
Also, they had a guy on set named Fumio Demura, who was a weapons expert, a martial arts expert, and he actually taught Bruce Lee nunchuck moves.
Okay.
Pat Morita's portrayal of Mr. Miyagi was heavily influenced by Fumio Demura. Morita spent a lot of time with Demura because Demura was his double for all the fight scenes. Okay. Spider-Man scene where he fights the skeletons, that is Fumio Demura. And he translated his experiences with him into not only his attitude toward martial arts, but also his accent and mannerisms.
Okay, love it.
Fumio Demura just passed away April of last year.
Okay.
Okay. Before this movie started, Billy Zabka had never taken any martial arts classes at all, was a wrestler in high school. But after this, he continued training and became a black belt in martial arts.
Love it. Good for him.
And he actually still owns the red leather jacket, which I would totally buy right now. I love that red leather jacket.
Nice. Billy Zabka has the same problem, I think, that like Chevy Chase has. Everybody he meets on the street is going to want to fight him, number one.
Yeah.
And same thing, like after you see Chevy Chase and Caddyshack, everybody's going to want to play you in golf.
No.
Right.
Right, yeah.
I know Chevy Chase is like, I'm not that good of a golfer. Billy Zabka needs to get his black belt just so he won't get his butt kicked all the time.
It's hilarious. Okay, and I can't believe that we've gone on for two episodes nearly now, and we have not talked about catching a fly with chopsticks. We talked about eating popcorn with chopsticks, but we did not catch a fly with chopsticks.
Men who catch fly with chopsticks can do anything.
Beginner luck. So they actually had a fly attached to a fishing line, and that's right. How they moved around. I thought it was excellently done. I didn't see no fishing line.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. The Karate Kid was the top rental video of 1985.
Nice.
Number one. All right. Ralph Macchio named his son Daniel.
Love it.
Okay. One more, right?
Okay.
The skeleton fight scene, they're filming the scene and it takes take after take after take. And it's just like, what is the problem here? And all of the Cobra Kai actors are like, hey, Fumio Demura is hitting us too hard. Like, this hurts.
Whoa.
Yeah, and so finally, after take after take after take, Fumio goes to Avildsen and says, if you let me bring my own students, this be done in one take. He says, okay. They bring in Fumio's students, put them in the skeleton costumes, one take, and they're done.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I never saw that before. That's good. Yeah. I like that tidbit.
There you go. All right. Are we to final judgment?
Let's go to final judgment.
Yeah. It's the moment we've all been waiting for.
Okay. Should I go first?
You go first.
Okay. So to me, this is a mismatch. Although Last Dragon is an enjoyable movie. It's a lot of fun. It's got great music. It's very 80s. I have a great time when I'm watching it. I love Vanity. I like Tymac. I think he does a good job. But for me, it's just no contest. The Karate Kid is to Mount Rushmore of 80s movies. That doesn't take anything away from The Last Dragon. Last Dragon is a great 80s movie. A lot of fun. I would own it on DVD if I could, but and Karate Kid's one of the greatest movies of the 1980s. To me, this is a landslide. Mr. Miyagi, Daniel's son, Johnny Lawrence, Cobra Kai, Karate Kid all the way.
Totally understand that. Okay. I totally understand how anybody else would feel that way.
Okay.
In looking at these two movies, the analogy that shone brightly for me was the difference between Superman the movie and Superman 2.
Ooh, okay.
If you're a kid in the 80s, like I was... your experience from Superman the movie is almost completely summed up in the intro scene of Superman 2. Like, you get all the highlights, and then you get to jump into three villains and campy comic book action. Whereas Superman the movie, Richard Donner is making a film. I mean, right. It's epic, it's majestic, it's beautiful. If I'm going back and I want to watch a film, I want to watch Superman the movie.
Okay.
I want to see a more compelling story. I want to see more compelling cinematography. That's what I want to go watch. If I want to have a freaking good time, I'm going to go watch Superman 2. Because even though it's campy,
yeah,
and it doesn't have all of that majestic stuff, it's fun. You get three bad guys. You get the extra long fall down Niagara Falls. I mean,
extra long.
You get the absurd trip into the fire as the reveal. I mean, it's all just crazy silliness, and I absolutely love it. So, if I'm teaching a film class and I'm picking between these two movies, it's Karate Kid all the way. Hero's journey, student meets his master, goes down to the greatest ordeal and comes out the victor in the end. Yes. But if I'm going to watch a movie with my kids and just want to have fun and laugh, I'm picking The Last Dragon because it's just silly, goofy dancing and karate and not a terribly intricate plot, and you got these memorable villains. I mean, you can't pick a better villain than Shonuff.
Yeah. He's great.
So then I have to ask myself, well, which thing am I going to more likely do? Am I going to go teach a film class, or am I going to watch a movie with my family? And the answer is, I'm going to go watch a movie with my family. And so in this particular scenario, I have to pick The Last Dragon.
What? Wow. Okay.
Don't get me wrong. The Karate Kid, you're right. It's an icon of the 80s. It's a cinematic masterpiece. But sometimes you just want to go have fun.
I get it. All right, guys. Well, we want to hear what you think. Is it Karate Kid? Is it The Last Dragon? Are we crazy? How do we do on our final judgment? We want to hear from you.
Guys, be sure and hit that follow button so that you can catch our next episode where we talk about Songs from the Big Chair by Tears for Fears, followed by Wham and Make It Big. Just Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Thanks, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
We will see you next week.